Hey, you're the one looking up stuff on ChatGPT over there.
I asked very specifically what questions to ask Mike Florio of ProFootballTalk.com on a Cleveland Sports Talk radio show.
I think we have an idea of it right now, and he joins us on the fan hotline from Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports. Also has ebooks out right now that you can find on Amazon, Father of Mine and Son of Mine. You know, he's an author and a writer. And I believe you are now, wait a minute, did you pass the bar, Mike? I'm sorry, are you a lawyer?
Yeah, I practiced for 18 years. I passed the bar twice, once in Pennsylvania and once in West Virginia.
I'll be dipped. Okay, I thought so, but I'm like, because there's a lot of guys who used to be like lawyers.
Congratulations on all your success.
And then they're writers, and I'm like, well, okay, which ones are which? So
that was not one of the ChatGPT questions that Ken just asked.
With what's going on with Quinshon Judkins here, I mean, let's go from a legal standpoint first. What's facing this Browns running back? And then we'll go to an NFL standpoint if we can.
Well, misdemeanor, domestic battery. The police report was released yesterday. Closed fist, punch to the mouth chin area of a former, or maybe more on again, off again, girlfriend. She waited a few days to decide to make the report, which is understandable under the circumstances. Look, I don't know what's true and what's not true, but it would be understandable that somebody wouldn't want to immediately call 911 and derail someone's career. Maybe she wanted to try to work through it. Maybe it just took her time. She told the police. She talked to friends and family about it, decided to make the report. She still had visible bruising. She had pictures from the day after the incident where the bruising was even more evident, according to the police report. So that's what he faces under Florida law, misdemeanor, domestic battery. But the separate issue is what the NFL will do about it. And one thing we've learned over the past 11 years, all the way back to the Ray Rice case, the NFL does not look kindly on allegations of players engaged in any form or fashion of domestic violence.
Well, Mike, we clearly know that optics are a big deal in the NFL. It stinks that we have to talk about this, the gravity of things like domestic violence, but then try to fashion it into a sports talk discussion about how many games maybe a player is suspended or whether it's the commissioner's exemplus. With that said, you know, I saw the headline on the New York Post this morning about this case and the grisly details involved in the police report. And that's when the NFL tends to really react to these things, no?
It's all a PR tool. And for most employers, and I'm not saying whether this is right or wrong, let's just put this in the proper context. For most employers in the United States of America, anything you do away from work does not matter to your employment relationship, as long as you can show up for work. And when I used to practice law, I would advise companies from time to time on the things that were okay and not okay to consider when deciding whether or not to keep someone. And for the NFL, that's gone out the window because there's collective bargaining, and the union and the league have agreed that for certain things, the personal conduct policy comes into play, even if it is completely unrelated to anything the player ever does at work. He's still going to be held responsible. Think about it. He's not working off season. He's not even signed to a contract yet. He's subject to this policy. That's the way the NFL does it. And it's all a product of PR because of the outcry from the fans, from the customers. If you have guys who are doing things they shouldn't be doing and the NFL imposes no punishment upon them, that's where it all comes from. It's all PR driven. It's case by case. But one thing we've seen, when domestic violence is involved, the NFL is far more likely to take action and maybe swift action, including putting him on paid leave right after he signs his contract.
So regardless of the legal outcome of this, because, you know, last year this went on with Mike Hall, who was another second-round draft pick of the Browns. Legally, there wasn't very much of it, but he was still suspended for a time, and it basically, with the injury at the end of the season, became a lost season. Am I to assume as much with Quinshon Judkins here with this Browns football team?
Well, here's the timeline with Mike Hall. The incident happened on August 12. He was arrested on August 13. By the 26th, he was placed on paid leave. And when you're placed on paid leave, you stay on paid leave until the case is resolved and until the subsequent NFL personal conduct policy case is resolved. So that creates a very real incentive for the player to resolve the criminal case ASAP, and then pivot around and take whatever punishment the NFL proposes and get back on the field. And that's what happened with Hall. He pleaded guilty to disorderly conduct. He ended up being suspended, I think, 5 games.
Mm-hmm.
And he got credit for the 4 that he missed while he was on paid leave. So there is strategically a reason to get this done the moment you're put on paid leave. Because if you just let the legal system play out while you're on paid leave, you may miss the whole season. Because unless you have an incentive to try to get your case wrapped up, and being on paid leave gives you that incentive, yeah, this thing could just linger and linger and linger. So that's how it could go for Judkins. We don't know what the NFL is going to do. They'll do their own investigation. They'll make a decision on whether or not they're going to put him on paid leave. They won't necessarily even announce that they're not doing it. But if they do it, he'll be gone, and he'll be back once that case is resolved. And presumably once he works out some sort of a deal with the NFL on whatever his punishment will be under the personal conduct policy.
Boy, you said something interesting there about the incentive structure that could be there for the player in these situations to plead, to get something over with sooner. Do prosecutors tend to use that as leverage when they have high-profile cases such as this?
Prosecutors use anything that they have. And if there's a way to get Quinshon Judkins to plead guilty to something and wrap up the case and move on, and they know he's going to receive a punishment within the confines of his employment. Yeah, that becomes part of what is negotiated. Now, again, Mike Hall pleaded guilty at the end of the day to disorderly conduct, and he allegedly put a gun to his girlfriend / fiance's head. So, you know, you may get some cooperation if you're willing to face the music and get this done quickly. But I think the prosecutors, if you're going to be fair, you recognize this guy's going to have a hell of a lot greater consequence within the confines of his employment than he's going to have as a first-time offender under the legal system.
Mike Florio joining us from Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports. What happens with the contract negotiation now? He's one of many, many, many second-rounders who haven't signed yet. They wanted guaranteed money, and now this is a major wrench thrown in here, is it not?
Yeah, and here's the broader look at what's going on in round 2. You've never had fully guaranteed contracts in the second round of the draft. This year, the Texans stepped out of line and gave Jaden Higgins a fully guaranteed contract at the second pick in round 2. That bracketed the Browns and forced them to do a fully guaranteed contract with Carson Schwechinger, the first pick in round 2. Everyone after that, and the next guy up is Nick Emmanuari of the Seahawks, then Judkins, the fourth pick in round 2. It isn't just all of them trying to get fully guaranteed contracts. There's a percentage that each guy gets fully guaranteed, and when you jack the top 2 all the way up to 100, the rest of them are going to see an increase, and you really don't know what the right increase is until the guys in front of you do their deals. There's a thought around the league that Judkins is going to be the one to take less than 100 because of this arrest. And that's going to set the ceiling for the 5th guy in round 2, which sets the ceiling for the 6th guy in round 2. And they're just going to fall like dominoes all the way down to the bottom of the round. By the bottom of the round last year, it was like 52% of the deal was fully guaranteed. So again, these guys aren't going to get 100% guarantee. It's just the fact that the top 2 got 100%. It screws up everything else. But there's a belief that Judkins is going to be the one to get the deal done because of what happened. And then the agents will just blame it on Judkins as they cave at lower and lower percentages as we get deeper and deeper into the round.
Mike Florio, you've done terrific work along with Pablo Torre on the collusion case that is now starting to ruffle some feathers even more so around the NFL. And in particular, with the players' union, where it doesn't seem like everybody was kept apprised of the collusion case. And for those that don't know, it all really starts with the guaranteed contract that Jimmy Haslam and the Browns gave to Deshaun Watson and how that was greeted by owners around the league. So what's the latest development with all this, in particular the CBA, players' union?
And really, it comes from the league. It all started with the league because they were able to twice fend off efforts by the NFL Players Association to make fully guaranteed contracts for all players part of the collective bargaining agreement. So 2011-2020, the NFL pushed back on that. When the Browns turn around and give Deshaun Watson 5-year fully guaranteed, the NFL's like, oh, wait a minute. Let's not give these guys piecemeal what we've been able to collectively prevent them from getting. That's basically what happened. The league in this collusion grievance that was hidden from everyone. The league was caught with their hand in the cookie jar, telling teams, urging teams to collude when it comes to the amount of guarantees. And the Watson deal sparked it. And then the teams held the rope, as did the next quarterback contracts, Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson. No fully guaranteed contracts for any of them. So where it stands now, the NFLPA has been shamed into filing an appeal of this ruling, which was hidden for 5 months. So there will be an appeal. I don't know that it goes forward. It's possible the NFLPA gives up its appeal because the NFL wants more than $12 million in reimbursement for attorney's fees, which I think is a very weak argument under the CBA. But that becomes cover for the NFLPA to just move on from this thing. And then meanwhile, what happened is once ESPN, after a few weeks of no one doing anything by way of advancing the story that Pablo and I lit the fuse on, after some ESPN reporting last week, it came out that Executive Director Lloyd Howell has an obvious conflict of interest. He's a paid part-time consultant with a private equity fund that has been approved to buy minority interest in NFL teams. I mean, it's as blatant as you can get. And now the NFLPA kind of circling the wagons around Howell, and some think they're just trying to kick the can to when training camp opens. And we all have bright, shiny objects every single day that distract us from this, and they can go forward with the Lloyd Howell. But we'll see. We'll see. There's a lot more to it. And Pablo's done a great job, and we've kind of both encouraged each other and challenged each other to advance the story. And it's hard to do when no one cares about it. And I thought it was funny over the weekend. When the NFLPA put out a very self-serving statement to support Lloyd Howell, all these reporters who had ignored the story from the get-go are quoting that statement. It's like, you guys don't even know what the hell's going on. And you're just putting that statement out there. You've been actively ignoring the story, but people are paying attention. And one thing I've realized is the fans really care about it. They just understand there's something wrong about everything that's going on. And even if it doesn't directly affect what we see on the football field, if the stuff behind the curtain isn't right, if there isn't a right balance there between league and players, it can create all sorts of weird outcomes. And it's just good to see that so many fans give a crap about something that so many reporters have been burying their head in the sands over.
Yeah, but Mike, if there is no recourse here, despite what the findings were, the management council and even owners openly saying that there was basically collusion here, with all that going on, what's the recourse if the judge didn't really punish the NFL? And what's to stop the NFL from continuing to go about its business in this manner and colluding?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens if this appeal goes forward, because it goes to a 3-judge panel. And the way I read the CBA, I don't think the arbitrator's decision gets a whole lot of deference. And I don't want to get too deep into the legal weeds, but a lot of times when you take a case up on appeal, you're stuck with some of the decisions made by the judge who handled the case below. I don't think the 3-judge panel on appeal is going to be bound by anything. So if there's a 2-1 ruling that the arbitrator got it wrong when he ignored and basically dismissed strong circumstantial evidence of actual collusion, because the arbitrator found, because he had to find, the league urged the teams to collude, he found that there was no evidence of actual collusion because he had an explanation for every piece of circumstantial evidence that was damning to the NFL's position. If 2 of these 3 judges that at the next level say, nah, you know what, we don't expect them to admit it. And look, one of the things I learned in my law practice, I represented employees who were fired from their jobs, and you file a wrongful discharge case, and you're going to have a parade of witnesses saying, no, we didn't consider that factor we weren't supposed to consider. So you have to prove that they did through circumstantial evidence. I think that the NFLPA has the circumstantial evidence. So there could be still an adverse ruling for the NFL, a possibly crippling billion-dollar damages award for the NFLPA. That's still possible. We'll see how zealous the NFLPA is. As I said earlier, they were shamed into filing the appeal. Will they zealously push this? Will they try to win it? That's why people are watching this. There's this weird sense that the NFL and the NFLPA, the NFLPA non-player leadership, that they're kind of in bed together, and these conflicts of interest, or the one very specific one Lloyd Howell has, is what's fueling this idea that something's going on here. And that's why I think fans care. Their spider sense is telling them, based upon the reporting that's been done that's really tackled this issue, something's going on. And And that's the biggest problem for both the union and the league. It just feels like something's going on.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. He's on the fan hotline. Find him on Twitter. Find him on X. Find him on everything at Pro Football Talk. He's the author of two ebooks out right now.
Got a new one coming, too.
Oh, you got a new one?
August 19th.
Well, what's the new one?
It's called Big Shield, and it is a fictional tale of how gambling, the mob, and professional football, but not the NFL, wink, wink, so I don't get sued for copyright infringement, can come together and create chaos. Because I've been very concerned about what legalized gambling can do as it relates to scandals in the NFL if the NFL isn't careful. And the main area I'm concerned about is how inside information can be misused by players. I don't think the NFL is nearly as concerned about what can happen. So this story is about a third-string quarterback who misuses inside information, funnels it to the mob before games, and more importantly, during games, to give the mob an inside track on what they need to know to win their bets. And it just kind of goes from there.
And that's on Amazon as well, August 19th.
It'll be available on Amazon. You can pre-order it now. 99 cents for the ebook, which is so freaking stupid of me. I almost said the other word, and thankfully I didn't. But it's so freaking stupid of me to sell them for 99 cents. It's a great deal, and you can get the print version for $14.99. Comes out August 19th.
Glorious. Absolutely glorious. Mike, thank you very much for the time.
Thank you, guys.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, all over social media, all over that. Has that new book, Big Shield. August 19th, coming out on Amazon. Big thanks to him for the time. 216-474-0092. All right, the Quinshon Judkins thing gets even weirder because he's not signed. And then I was surprised that Quinshon Judkins' contract situation has something to do with other players after all this. I mean, if you were one of their agents, you'd be going nuts.